Missouri, Canada. I'm with the Texas Pipeline Association.
Appreciate you joining us here today to talk about several things involved with oil and gas on the Crude Life Media Network. Before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of things, let's talk about your organization a little bit, the Texas Pipeline Association. You know, what you guys are doing for the industry, how your involvement is, that sort of thing.
Certainly, Jason. The Texas Pipeline Association is a statewide trade association made up of over 40 members. We were founded in 1983. And the main focus of the mission of the Texas Pipeline Association is advocacy work in front of regulatory bodies such as our oil and gas regulatory body, which is the Railroad Commission of Texas, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, and we also advocate for legislative issues and with the legislature and with the governor's office and other state agencies.
So, what's the number one issue right now as far as advocacy and letting people know about, you know, from an industry standpoint, what you guys are kind of fighting the battle at?
Well, there's always a myriad of issues going on around oil and gas in Texas. Of course, we are one of the largest in the country and in North America and in the world on producing oil and gas. Of course, you know, the Permian is overtaking the biggest in the world, and they keep drilling there, and we are building and supplying the infrastructure to get it from the Permian Basin to market. A lot of the issues that we deal with relate to pipeline safety. An issue we can probably talk about later is eminent domain comes up when you talk about pipelines, but we have a very good story to tell about that because the pipeline industry hardly ever uses eminent domain. We did a sample just last year. We took a sampling of 15,000 miles of pipeline, and out of those 15,000 miles of pipeline, we dealt with over 35,000 tracts of land, and condemnation rates were less than 4%, and then less than 1% of that ever went to a courtroom. So that shows you that the pipeline industry has a 96% successful negotiation rate with our landowners. And so that's a proud story that's a story that we're very proud of and that we take and advocate to legislators and policymakers on that.
Talk to me a little bit more about that. What's some of the methods, some of the, strategies that are being done? That's some incredible numbers. I mean, I've done a lot of eminent domain stories in the past 5-6 years, and that's up there with some of the best in the nation, I'd say.
Without a doubt, because the truth of the matter is we want to be neighbors and friends with the landowners because we're going to be their friends and neighbors for a very long time. And so we want to treat people with integrity, with transparency, and Texas has a very reliable and fair process in statute right now that was done probably around 7 or 8 years ago. And it has worked well for both landowners and for the economy of the state of Texas.
Let's talk a little bit about this current state of pipelines, if you wouldn't mind. We can talk some more about some of those issues in just a second. But I just with everything that's going on with the pipelines being maxed out down in the Permian and a few things, and you've got the big pipeline that's being kind of built from the Permian down to, I think, Corpus Christi it is. Let's just kind of a state of Texas pipelines, if you will, from your perspective as the Texas Pipeline Association. Where are you seeing the projects, and where do you see it going?
Sure, it's an exciting time, as you well know, in the oil and gas industry. The Permian is blowing and going, and we are very fortunate that we are blessed with that asset in this great state because it adds so much to our economy. But a statistic I heard is I think the production is about 4 million barrels a day. And I think there's anywhere from 3.1 to 3.5 barrels worth of capacity going from the Permian to the Gulf Coast. So you can see there's a little bit of lag, but we're excited. I think that the midstream and pipeline industry is addressing that. But we're excited about addressing that issue, and there are numerous projects that you've probably seen in numerous trade association too that I'm very aware of that are going from the Permian to the Gulf Coast, and there's a couple of gas lines that are going down to South Texas and then to the Gulf Coast. So the pipeline business is doing really good right now.
Are you hearing much on the price of steel with the tariffs and pipeline costs. We've talked a little bit about it with a couple people. I think Lauren Scott and I believe Joe Dancy and I have talked about the potential behind that, whether it would impact it or not. Of course, steel tariffs. You think of anything that involves steel, from certain types of nails to pipeline materials. Are you hearing anything with your ear to the rail or pipeline, if you will?
Yes, we are, Jason. I mean, we are concerned about the steel tariff, and this association joined with numerous other trade associations to write a letter to President Trump asking to look at all of the possibilities that could happen with a steel tariff. Of course, just like any kind of policy that goes into effect, it's kind of like the balloon. If you squeeze the balloon at one end, it's going to blow up at the other, and vice versa. With a steel tariff, it kind of changes the rules in the middle of the game, and so it's going to definitely add cost to projects, cost to getting the steel. And at the same time, a lot of the pipeline quality steel that are used in pipeline construction can't be found or can't be produced fast enough in the United States to take care of the capacity problems that are becoming evident in the Permian and getting the hydrocarbons to market.
Do you guys oversee much of the natural gas side of things? I didn't include it in kind of the topics we were going to talk about, but I thought as long as I have you on, do you guys do much with the natural gas? Is there kind of an update from that side of things?
Absolutely. Originally, this association primarily dealt with natural gas. And of course, it started in 1983, so that was many years ago. But at that time, the association was the Intrastate Natural Gas Pipeline Association. And then as the market has evolved and liquids have become more profitable and crude, of course, has become more plentiful, we encompass both natural gas utilities and liquid pipelines.
So how can people, if they want to become members or join your guys' advocacy, that type of thing, how can they go about doing that?
Right. Our membership is over 40 member companies, and you have to operate at least 250 miles of pipeline within the state of Texas. And it's got to be within the state of Texas because this is the only state trade association in the country that deals solely with the interest of intrastate pipelines as opposed to federal regulated interstate pipelines.
You guys are the only ones that do that?
To my knowledge, I think we are the only ones that deal specifically with intrastate.
Oh, no kidding.
We bleed into interstate a lot, but people often ask me why Texas has their own pipeline association. And I said, well, one, because we're Texas and we probably deserve it. But two, we just have a lot of pipeline, and we have a lot of pipeline miles in the state of Texas. The Railroad Commission has total pipeline miles in Texas at over 448,000 miles, and just intrastate lines, that's lines running within the borders of the state of Texas, we have over 396,000 miles of pipeline.
No kidding, huh?
Yes, wow. Sir.
Hey, have you been following much of some of the innovation behind that? Has that made it to your desk as far as whether it be smart pigs or some of the other sensor type things that they're adding to pipelines every single day, it seems like?
Sure. The innovation changes daily, and it just gets better and better and better. Of course, if you talk to any of my member companies and you talk to me in this association, there's no higher priority that we have in the pipeline industry than safety. And so our member companies spend millions of dollars themselves on improving technologies to find potential risks, to find potential flaws that could happen. We're constantly doing that, and we're constantly meeting with first responders around the state to educate those individuals on what to do if an incident does occur. But I need to brag on our safety record a little bit because one of my sister trade associations, the Association of Oil Pipelines in Washington, D.C., they just released a study, and they said the barrels of crude that were delivered by pipeline in the U.S. rose 43% from 2012 to 2016. And it said the incidents impacting the public or environment has declined 19% during that exact same time. So you can, that statistic right there is very powerful and shows that the industry is constantly looking for better ways to implement pipeline safety measures. And to brag on this association a little bit, I can't remember when, I think it was probably in the 90s, this association took the lead to spur a integrity management program for pipelines, and that was the first time it had ever been done throughout the country. And the feds thought that that was such a good idea that PHMSA adopted that and now implemented an integrity management pipeline program for the entire country. So we were ahead of the curve on that.
Look at that. Yeah, that's usually how it starts, right? Grassroots, and then it works its way up to the top till it gets recognized, usually.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jason, very much. I've got some more statistics on some economic impacts of pipelines in the state, if you want some of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you've got them, let's talk about that. Yeah. I mean, so let's hear. What are those stats?
About 3 years ago, this association, we commissioned Texas Tech to do a study on the economic impact of solely the midstream industry. You see these numbers every once in a while of what the economic impact of the oil and gas industry as a whole is for the country and for the state, and those numbers are gargantuan. And it's but what I wanted to do is pick out upstream and pick out downstream and so focus solely on midstream and find out what exactly the economic impact was. And the numbers were just staggering. Texas Tech came back and said in 1 year alone, the Texas pipeline industry contributed $33 billion with a B in economic output, and it sustained more than 165,000 jobs, and it contributed $18.7 billion in gross state product, and in local government taxes in 1 year, it contributed $1.6 billion. And that's just the midstream. That's not your producers. That's not your chemical plants. That's solely the pipeline midstream industry. So I thought that, and that was a conservative estimate that they used, and I just thought that that was a fascinating snapshot of the economic impact of pipelines.
You know, isn't that incredible? I mean, I was at a conference a few years ago, and Stephen Moore, he's an economist for Heartland Group, maybe? Heritage Foundation. He's a Fox News contributor as well. But he had a study up that showed that over the last decade, the only industry that added jobs was the mining sector, which is oil and gas, where
right.
that falls under. But all of these startups and all this technology talk and all these other things in the last decade have not added jobs, a net gain of jobs, except for the mining industry, which is oil and gas. And another, another study that I found interesting is up in Belfield, North Dakota, they're building the first greenfield refinery in the last 50 years. From full-on refinery up there, and was it the Anacortes study out of the state of Washington? And this is the Davis refinery up in Belfield is where this study came about, through Anacortes in Washington, their refinery. For every job, it's 12 or 24 jobs that get produced because of one job out of a refinery. So for every 100 jobs at a refinery, it actually equals 2,000 people in your local community. I mean, it is absolutely amazing the economic ripple and stability that the energy industry really brings to communities. Don't you think? I mean, that's what you're trying to say with these economic studies. So I'm just trying to validate what you're saying, I guess.
No, you're exactly right, and my apologies for not knowing much about the North Dakota economy, but I know that, and you probably remember when the recession was around us a couple of years ago, that the oil and gas industry in Texas definitely kept Texas on the forefront without going into the deep recession. So
you know,
we fared better than much of the country, and I don't know about North Dakota, but I would imagine the same thing held true up there as well.
Well, and that same study with Stephen Moore, when he talked about the mining industry being the only industry that's gained jobs over the last decade, they said that, what was it, North Dakota was holding its own, and Texas's economy was basically carrying the rest of the nation. It was incredible because everybody else was in a downturn so bad, but the oil and gas sectors were still pumping oil out. They were still, at least, you know, they had a heartbeat going for the rest of the place. And so Texas was just huge, carrying the rest of the country. And of course, they're, you know, they're the number one driller of oil and gas and producer and that sort of thing. And so you, when you really look at it, it does make a lot of sense. At least from a bigger picture. In my mind, it does, because I follow this stuff on a regular basis. So what was the numbers on those midstream billions and millions again?
Sure. You can find that on our website at texaspipelines.com. The study is published on that. But the economic output for 1 year, the snapshot that they gave, was $33 billion in economic output. And then it sustained 165,000 jobs. And then and added $1.6 billion to state and local government taxes.
What was that? One point what?
$1.6 billion in state and local taxes.
Wow.
And the neat thing is they did a study, they prolonged the study and made an estimate that through 2024, that just the midstream industry again, Jason, not production, because that's going to be more billions, and the chemical manufacturers, that'll be more billions, but just the midstream industry through 2024 will probably average $374 billion in total economic output, and then it'll sustain on average about 171,000 jobs, and again, it'll add $1.5 to $2 billion per year in state and local taxes.
You know, it's going to be incredible, too, once those chemical plants are built down in Lake Charles and down in Corpus Christi, when they get some of that stuff together. And then that pipeline that goes from the Permian, I think it's the Exxon pipeline that goes from the Permian right to the Gulf there. When a lot of these projects get done and you know, call it 10 years from now, it's going to be amazing what these numbers, the potential that these numbers could even do then.
It really is. And it keeps energy affordable and reliable.
Yeah, that's amen to that, huh? Is that the truth? I laugh, you know, we really look at like natural gas, you know, $3, go over to Great Britain, man, you're paying $18. You know, China, it's about $8, $8.50. But I mean, it's amazing when you start looking at it like that, just how cheap our energy is and everything like that. So it's yeah, I think it's fantastic. But well, I appreciate that. Yeah, anything else that we need to cover on there? Anything you want to reiterate or we forgot to mention or anything like that?
No, if you just mentioning the price of gas overseas, I mean, that's an emerging market, and a market that's gaining steam here in Texas is the export of LNG, which is contributing to the building of additional pipelines.
You know, that's a fun story to follow. I've been following it for a while. Lee Tillman, he's the president of Marathon Oil, interviewed him a few years ago on that. And he was able to really boil it down to let me understand it, where he just says it's not economical yet to ship a hydrocarbon across or a molecule across the sea yet, you know, and he basically brought it down to the price. He said, but in the next 3 to 5 years, you'll start to see more shipments happen. And here we are, you know, 2-3 years later, and here you are telling me it's already starting to happen. So it's fun to see this stuff come to fruition.
It truly is.
So that's another good news for LNG producers out there. Fantastic. So, well, this is good times. We'll have to have you on the program again with some updates, especially if you've got some advocacy. You know, we're not a political program, and we don't do politics, but we talk policy, and we certainly give people a platform so they let the energy industry know what to look out for and how to separate the wheat from the chaff, if you will.
Absolutely, Jason. Feel free to call anytime, because that's what the association's here for.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
You have a good one. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.